Welcome, everybody, to Satisfactionist Live. I am your host, Ben Olmos, and sorry, folks, for the technical delays that we had today. For whatever reason, Skype just decided to give us a lot of challenges, and Lisa couldn't get in, and then Danielle dropped, and it just turned into this whole thing, but we are live now, so sorry, folks, for the delay, but I had to make sure we got everybody in the room, and very excited to have with me today two wonderful special people that I have had the pleasure of working with in my past at Big Red here in Atlanta. First up, Danielle Jinks. Danielle, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you, Ben?
I am doing wonderful. Better now.
Awesome. That's right.
And then the wonderful Lisa Fay. Lisa, how are you?
Hey, hey, hey. Hey, you know what? It's not if a problem's going to happen. It's how you handle the problem when it happens. So we're all good.
That's right. That's right.
We are all good. So this is actually an episode that I've been really excited about for a number of reasons. One, I get the opportunity to talk to you two wonderful ladies, which I it's great to have you both here at the same time. But the other thing that I'm excited to talk about is the topic tonight around personal branding. And this is probably one of those terms that is used a lot, probably, I'm going to say, even probably misapplied oftentimes, because I think that there are folks who throw in the fact that, well, you know, oh, this doesn't align with my personal brand, but maybe they don't totally know what that is. And then there's another group of folks who probably feel like this is an overused term and it's a little cliche and a little worn out. So, but the both of you do a lot, I want to say you kind of do a lot of work in this space. And then coming from a big branding company, as we did, you know, kind of a lot of exposure to this. So, Lisa, I'm going to start with you because... Lisa is a speaker, an author, a former global sales trainer, and just has a lot of label. I mean, travel agent, a lot of different things that you do. And so I'm very curious, you know, how do you shape or frame up what personal branding is?
Well, I think there's a couple of different levels. One, I think it's what you stand for, no matter who is interacting with you in your life. So I did an exercise once that where I sent out a request and I said, give me the three words you think of when you think of Lisa Fay. And I sent it to friends. I sent it to business associates. I sent it to clients and customers, et cetera, thinking initially that there would be a little bit of a difference in all of them. And in fact, the core was the same. I took all of that input and put it in a word cloud. And for those that don't know what word clouds are, is you take a set of data, and the more times that words are repeated, the text gets bigger in the picture. So if it's only said once, it shows up really small. And if it's said 100 times, it shows up really large. And I found that people see me the same no matter where I am. And I think that is, first of all, that is a part of the core Lisa Fay that I go wherever I am. Then I think that there's a different piece of me that's also a part of my brand. Depending on the work that you do with me that relates to the background. For example, if I'm working as a travel agent, the fact that I've been to 75 countries and counting really gives credibility and shows that I've been there and I go there and I experience it. On the other hand, as a speaker, the ability to say that I've done two TEDx talks helps build that brand as well. So I think it comes from, and then I then segment the messaging that I do and all those other places to reinforce the brand positioning that I want to have. But it's all grounded in the base piece of who I am as a person and what I stand for.
That is awesome. That is a great, great explanation. Danielle, I'm going to, because you also work in this space, but you have a very interesting background because you also work in change management. And I'm going to venture to say that change management is almost like in an evolution of your brand because you're changing hearts and minds and behaviors in that kind of work. And maybe you're helping people refine or improve their brand. So what are your thoughts on it?
Well, first, I like to say change management is all about marketing. And marketing has everything to do with your brand, right? So it's really how you introduce yourself. It's how you introduce the change. And it's really about how people perceive you. So the way that Lisa has set this up is perfect because it's not really about how you see yourself. It's how your consumer sees you. And that's where I think when you alluded to in the beginning is the misconception could be that you have complete control of your brand. Well, you do to some respect, but it's how people see you. So when I think about change management in the respects of brand and marketing, I have to make sure that as a practitioner of change, that people see the change and see themselves in the change and have to manage that and control the narrative.
So here's a question then for both of you. When you think about branding and your personal branding, is there an age where it matters? I don't want to say matters more or less, but is personal branding something for every age group?
Where do we start?
I'll let you start first, then I'll jump in.
Let me tell you, when people say, I don't know if I have a brand or do I need a brand? Guess what? Regardless if you invest in it or not, you have a brand. Because if we go back to how people perceive you, that is your brand. And so whether you are an infant or an adult, it doesn't matter. You have a brand. You think about a, you know, an infant where they say, oh, she's so relaxed, or she never cries, or she loves to talk and sing or whatever it is. That's your brand. That's how people see you. So it is not age agnostic. It happens whether you like it or not.
Yeah, so it's not so much how you feel about you. It's how others feel about you.
Absolutely.
So and Lisa, go ahead. I'll let you add to that.
Well, I'll jump in and say that I think the other thing is that there are actions you can take once you understand your brand to either reinforce it or shift it. And then part of that is in your control. If you're known as fussy, bossy, et cetera, like in corporate environments where we do 360 reviews and you get what the perception of you is, which by default is your brand, then you can either choose to take actions that are going to continue to reinforce how people view and see you. Because again, that perception is not about your intent. Now, if I have part of my branding out there that I don't like, then I have to look at what are the actions I can take to potentially shift that over time. It doesn't happen tomorrow. So again, I think Danielle was spot on. You've got one. Everybody's got one. Now what you do with it becomes your choice. And then you can choose to take the actions accordingly.
Right. Right, Lisa. It's a living, breathing thing.
And everything we do either reinforces what people already think of us, or it causes them to think of us in a new way. And if it causes them to think of us in a new way, what they're going to need to do is they're going to continue to look and watch us to see if our additional actions reinforce the new pattern or they don't.
Right.
Yeah. And
we go back to the old brand.
One of the things I was going to say is, you know, for me personally, this is where I get a little, I guess you could say that my brand is a little all over the map. And the reason why I say it's a little all over the map is because, you know, there's this academic side of me that, you know, teaches classes and leads students and all of that wonderful stuff. And I enjoy that. And I enjoy the mm-hmm. academic pursuits. But at the same time, there's also this very kind of dark humor kind of person who is really pragmatic and also, you know, jokes around a lot and oftentimes a little dodgy to try and get a pulse on. And so what I find is that really confuses people because, you know, they sometimes hear the credentials, but at the end of the day, like I still don't mind doing lots of just regular everyday things that, you know, I think sometimes are different than what people would perceive, you know, somebody, I remember, so I'm working on my PhD and you know, working in the wine industry and a business analyst. And I came in one day and I was telling my coworkers, I was like, you know, I changed my brakes this weekend. And they're like, oh yeah, where'd you go? I said, no, I changed my brakes this weekend. And they're like, you can do that? And I'm like, it's not hard. So, it you know, it's just kind of interesting that, you know, people kind of get this perception that, you know, I guess, as I've been told sometimes, my audio doesn't always match my video.
What I'll suggest to you, though, is, in fact, people only know the part of your brand that you show them.
That's right.
So if all I ever see is your CV from an academic perspective, it's all I know about you. So if you want them to see more of you, you have to be willing to share more. I thought you were this way until I got to know you. Then right. I found all these additional layers. However, what I would also suggest, Ben, is your core brand sounds like it's the same no matter where you are. You enjoy learning, you enjoy people, and you have a sense of humor. And I would take those three elements and say, I don't think I could go anywhere in your life where people would challenge that those three things are not true about you.
Right, right. And I think everything else, like the changing of brakes, becomes a bonus. So, right? So what Lisa just described is your brand, because I would agree that is how you show up, and you show up as, you know, someone who appreciates research. You do have a sense of humor. I never in a million years would have thought you were one who could change brakes. So, and maybe that's just that piece, that hidden bonus, right, about you that people just tend to find out, which that in and of itself is part of your brand, that there's some mystery to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny because the best compliment I ever got at work one time was from a manager who told me, she said, you know, you're the same with everyone. Like, whether you're talking to an upper level executive or a frontline worker, like, you don't change the way you approach people, or the way you talk with people, the things you say to people. You're just that same person. And quite honestly, I am, regardless. If I'm teaching a class or, This is pretty much what you get. My family probably gets a little bit more raw meat, but outside of that, but when I say raw, I don't mean like, you know, like all of a sudden I turn on the, you know, four letter words or anything. But I just mean that like, you know, like my guard is down a little bit more, but as you probably would with family, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's something important to mention here when you think about your personal brand. And it's that there are influencers that could influence the way you exercise your brand, right? So maybe your family is a trigger for a different side of you that others would not see. You know, just as we think about news and media, social media, friend circles, there are influencers that are what I like to consider brand triggers that will demonstrate sides of you, which is that we mentioned you and the breaks and the bonus, right? But to Lisa's point, there's always the core of you that remains consistent.
Well, let me ask you guys this, because this is... I'm going to take up for some of my students that I often work with. And one of the things that I see in the younger generation, I like to call them the emerging leaders, is, you know, sometimes there's this attitude. Well, two things, right? One, and I literally had this question in class about respect, and that, you know, I've heard this a few times, actually, in class where people have said, you know, I deserve respect. And to yes, there is a level of respect that every single person absolutely does deserve. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to certain kind of doing research, writing papers, getting that feedback, you know, sometimes people feel like they're not being respected in the feedback process. Mm-hmm. And that is really something that I find is new in this current generation, where sometimes feedback is not necessarily like we used to hear all the time. Feedback is a gift, right? You might not always love it, but it's a gift.
According to whom?
I got lots of gifts in my career.
Yeah, right? So... But you know, feedback can be a gift genuinely. What I find in the younger generation is that there's sometimes this feeling of like, you have to give me feedback in a respectful way. You know, sometimes the work is so bad that I'm not being disrespectful. I'm being honest. You know, how as managers and leaders of today, do you really address that feeling without finding yourself in a situation where now the recipient feels that they've been insulted and their feelings are hurt and they're no longer talking to you? They're going around you to some other manager above you, to HR, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. <you're> like, I mean, because I've been there, Ben, as a, you know, an instructor, you and I were once peers. Here's the thing. It's a new day. It's a new time. Right. And what we thought, you know, traditionalism, right. We were raised, born to say, hey, take it in and do with it what you choose, what you please. But we're in a totally different world right now. So, which is probably one of the reasons why I got out of teaching, but no, that's another topic for another day.
You're coming back.
One day I am. Absolutely. But I think there's power in the relationship. And even as an instructor, or even as a person in leadership or a person in power, we cannot forget that there's power in the relationship where people grant you the right to give them the feedback, or grant you the right to coach them and be their mentor, where before we were appointed because of our titles and our roles. I think today we are now invited in. And if you're not invited in, everything is disrespectful and not right. And to be honest, I had to learn that the hard way with my children. I'm like, I'm your mother. I am appointed the authority to tell you that that paper is absolutely horrible, right? But it's, oh, you're not, I hear it at home, right? So it's the relationship that gives me the authority to say, that didn't work. That didn't sound right. I don't know, Lisa, what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, I think there's a piece of that. I would tell you that as I have led teams, what I have found is that I win my teams, my individuals one at a time. There will be a moment, and I never know what it's going to be, where I'll have to make a decision, either back them or not back them in something. And it can be, I need to handle something with my child. It could be something with a customer. They're all over the board. You never know when they show up. And sometimes even when they show up, you don't catch them till later. But that's when I win you or lose you. The second thing is, if you're lucky enough to have a small enough group, you need to understand the individual motivations. Mm. Not everybody wants to be president of the company. And that's okay. But if I understand what your personal motivation is, what you want to do, and more importantly, why you want to do it, how you want to be perceived, and how you prefer to get feedback, I can individualize that to each person. Mm-hmm. I had somebody that worked for me that never wanted public recognition. Okay, first of all, that's not me. I love celebrating everybody and everything. I want to shout from the rooftops when you do a great job and you're on my team. And he hated that. So I had to figure out a different way
to give him private recognition. So he knew that I got more out of him that way because I knew that. There's some people that would say, you know what? You know, they teach you the sandwich sometimes in feedback. Here's the great thing you did, but you really have an opportunity here, but you're still great.
The sandwich.
I got a word for that kind of sandwich, and it's probably not one we can say on.
Oh, you can say anything. We're unedited and uncut, so if it's within your brand.
My personal brand will not allow me to say such language that will be recorded for posterity.
Good for you.
I think you know what I was referring to.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
But there's some people.
It also
really
comes on a shingle, by the way.
It does. It does. But I've had people say that, you know what? Just tell me, just straight out. I don't need all this other stuff.
They're
tell
lying.
Me what you need, et cetera. Some people, no, actually, you know what? This person worked for me a couple of times. And I swear they were like, get to the point, get to the point. And I'm like, okay. And I had to learn that's how they needed feedback delivered. But if I went right down the hall to the very next person and tried to deliver that in the same way, I mean, I would have gotten just pushback. They wouldn't have listened to anything I said. So I think it's all about their personal goals, their personal objectives, what and why they're there, and then how you can help them. And then understanding the individuality of how they like to receive feedback. And even though, even when I understand how you want to receive feedback, doesn't mean I don't give you tough feedback.
Right.
It just means I couch it differently. I position it differently. I also need to understand how much you can take.
Right.
Some of the best feedback I ever gave one of my people is, and he's risen multiple levels at the Coca-Cola company now, is when I first worked with him, I said, you're lucky you're not good. And he walked out of my office so pissed off. And it took him 6 months before he came back to me and said, you're right. I was just lucky. Now I want to be good.
Mm, powerful.
Yeah. That's
but we had to have that tough moment where he got angry
And then he had to decide what he wanted to do. Now, I knew he had further aspirations. I knew he wanted to be promoted and go on to bigger and better things. And being a great Coke rep in a Coke market of Atlanta doesn't mean you could go to the toughest market in the country and work, where your brand may not be the number one most preferred. And I said, you need to be good enough not to have an asterisk by your name that says, oh, he was a good sales rep. I mean, if you sell in Atlanta.
Right. No, that's really a, that's an important thing to think about. I mean, it's, you know, now that I'm in the wine industry, you know, selling wine in Northern California, it's competitive, but it's not hard because there's so many people that want the product. Selling wine in, like, you know, Missouri or, well, Missouri's actually cannot be that bad, but I mean, they're like Mississippi and, you know, kind of the lower southern states. That can be a tough gig because, you know, beer is a much more preferred, you know, beverage in you know, those markets. So, you know, and then if you're selling fine wine, I mean, it's even more of a challenge. And it's not to say there isn't a market for it, but there's a far greater market for it in other places. So to your point, like in Atlanta, I mean, you could throw a rock and hit, you know, hit a Coke can around here.
I mean, but what Lisa has touched on is so important, which is knowing your market, right?
Yeah.
And the example that you provided with your student, you know, it's really understanding your student. And, you know, when you're a facilitator, you're an instructor, you have a very finite amount of time to get to know your student, if
Absolutely.
You will. So, you know, you have trade-offs, right? So sometimes you're not going to always hit the mark with the people that you are working with. So it just is what it is. There's your grade, there's your feedback, and that's it, right?
And it's not going to be, even though you put as much heart and soul into every classroom setting that you do, it's not going to hit all of those people the same way.
That's right.
And you can try to flex, right? So you can try to hit, you know, most of the learning styles in the group, but you'll still never do a perfect job for each person. You can
That's
just
right.
do the best you can and create an avenue for people to come to you for additional support or information if it's not quite getting. But, you know, we don't do you stuff.
I mean, could you imagine trying to be all things to everybody? I mean, that's not great brand management at all. You can't.
No, but, you know, what's interesting about that, though, is that when you think of senior executive leaders, so one of the things, and I'm going to throw one in there that we all know and are familiar with. And one of the things that she said, and I'm going to butcher it, and Lisa, you may know it better because I'm talking about Kathleen Sciaramella, who's a fantastic, you know, president of food service for the Coke company. But she used to say that when your customer has a crisis, you want to be the first person they call. And, and she, you know, that kind of speaks to that power of the relationship.
Absolutely.
You know, you want to build good relationships with people and most of all, trusting relationships with people that they see you as an opportunity to get good advice. You know, it's always about being a trusted advisor.
Absolutely.
And that, I mean, it's hard sometimes because, I mean, I know there are people who say, you know, be real with me. And, you know, in my experience, I haven't always found that that's really what they mean.
And you know what? Often when people say, be real with me, they really don't know you, because if they knew you, they know that you're always going to be real with them. So you don't have to preface it by saying that.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, again, I mean, I have a very kind of pragmatic style and very, I just kind of don't BS people. If I don't think it's good, I'm going to tell you, but I used to be a lot harsher, more harsh, I should say, in that, like, I would just basically call it out and be very plain spoken. Now, to my defense, I'm an ENTJ. And so if you're familiar with that as a Myers-Briggs personality type, you'll know that I am that very kind of strong-headed, you know, just plain spoken, not going to pretty it up. And I find that I have found that's not a style that is always welcome. So I'm probably a little bit more reserved now. And I think even going through the whole PhD process, more selective with my words rather than just kind of being direct and very, you know, sometimes cutting, if you will.
What's the driver of that, though? I mean, go ahead, Lisa. I'm sorry.
No. I think you were headed a great place. Go ahead, Danielle.
No, I was just going to ask, what's driving that? Because I mean, we go way back then.
Yes. Right? So literally, you used to sit like right in front of me.
Yeah. Yes. So what I would say, what's driving that? What there had to be a shift in your brand, which happens, right? We could always shift our brands when we need to. So what's the driver? I'm just curious.
So when you say driver for being more selective with my word choice?
Yes.
Well, you know, it's funny. Not only just kind of getting feedback, which, you know, it does help, absolutely. But I found myself when I was going through my doctoral process and going through my dissertation. And you have to, you are always asked if what you wrote is what you meant. And if that's what you wrote, where did that come from? And if where you got it, which is where you think it came from, is that actually where it came from? Or did it really come from somewhere else? Is it a derivative of something, you know, some foundational knowledge or learning? And so what I have found is, and there's this wonderful book that was written by Daniel Kahneman called Thinking Fast and Slow. And he talks about how, you know, and we learn this in the corporate world that having fast answers are valued because they want people who just have the answer very quickly. But that doesn't work in a doctoral program. So what you find is that you think slower, you think through things more, you think through the facts of it more. And since I also did a focus on positive psychology, in reading and learning about different personality types and behavior types, you know, I'm far less quick to use my quick instincts of judgment and let that just come out. And what I've learned, even through teaching, is that what you see is not what, it's the tip of the iceberg. There is so much more below the surface. And so I learned it through students. I learned it through the student who was constantly turning in late papers and showing up for class late. And, you know, I had this attitude of they're just not taking it seriously. Come to find out, it wasn't that at all. They're working two jobs. They're a single mom. They're raising kids. They're late because they're taking public transportation to get to school. They don't have a computer. They got to go to the library to write their papers or borrow a computer. They don't have Wi-Fi. Like, it's learning things like that about people that you go, all right, maybe you shouldn't be such an ass. there we go. I thought we lost you, Danielle.
No, I thought we did too. It's inclement weather here, so I'm glad we're still here.
So that was kind of my paradigm shift. That experiences like that, you know, just kind of going through everything I went through, and so also I've just something about being in the corporate hamster wheel. And because I'm speaking with folks who all came from a same type of organization, you know, the organization has a very, very polished, a very great exterior, But we all know from being inside there that that does not mean that there aren't expectations or demands or things that have to run very well. And so you've got to raise your game. And it can sometimes be a little bit of an unforgiving environment because you got to deliver. And
absolutely.
When you come away from that and, you know, you step off of that wheel and you have a moment to breathe and you kind of reset your expectations, all of that also contributed to you know, kind of my changing of perspective.
I think one of the things, because I, like you, am an ENTJ, so I resemble some of your remarks.
I'm in an island by myself.
One of the things I had to figure out is how important was it to me that I be heard and understood? And if it was more important to just say what I wanted to say the way I wanted to say it, I didn't have to worry about filters. If, however, I wanted to influence, I really wanted to be make a considered or a considerate response. I really wanted to engage you. I really wanted to you to understand the bigger piece of the message. I would need to adjust my message. So I learned that I really needed to spend more time working with people internally the way I would work with external customers, which said deliver information in the way that they want information delivered to them.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, it's telling a story to help them get to the idea. For other people, it's here's my recommendation. Here's the three reasons why. And I worked for Tom Moore, and I went to a workshop on how men and women speak differently. And they work differently. And I came back and I was so excited. And I was like, Tom, I went to this workshop. It was great. Here's the cassette. So it was a while ago. Here's the cassette. I bought it. I thought it would be great. And he goes home in his truck and he says, he puts it in his car. He comes back the next morning and calls me. He goes, oh my God, this explains the management team. This is why the one woman on the management team does this, and we think about it this way, and we do this, with it, and it explains you. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, sometimes I just want you to get to the point. He said, I hired you to do the job because I know you can do the job. Make the recommendation, make a decision, come with to me with that recommendation. And if I need more detail, I'll ask for it. The time I'm probably going to go, okay, fine. He goes, you want to know why you can't get time on my calendar? He's like, because you're going to talk me to death.
Wow.
It's like, wow. Okay, so here's the deal. I was like, sometimes, I said, now that I understand how you like information, I'll bring it to you that way. But every once in a while, I will need to do what you call beat an idea to death. Will you do that with me occasionally? He's like, absolutely. If 99% of the time we can get to the point, I'll let you beat an idea to death with me sometimes.
You know,
but that shifted us.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Right.
I think what's interesting though, like, and the thing that I picked out about that is it kind of illustrates what I was talking about earlier, just the change in attitude. You know, whereas you took that as when he said, this is why, you know, we don't have meetings because you don't get to the point, but like people, the younger generation these days would just be so offended and they would be on like, you know, Monster that afternoon and be like, I'm not going to work for this person anymore. They've hurt my feelings and I'm leaving the organization. And you know, back then it was just kind of like, well, you took your licks and people were honest and you learned and you grew from it and you adapted and then you went back and did more.
Like, yeah, or you had some people who took the lick, right, and sort of went under a rock.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
and never came back under. I came on back on top. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I think, and Lisa, it's nice to know that you're also an ENTJ because you know that our motto is it's not no, it's not right now.
There you go.
And I'm an ISTJ.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, you know, that's weird. I don't take you as an I. Like, I feel like
I'm a trained extrovert, believe it or not.
So when you're done, that's it. You recess back into your
That's it.
That's okay.
But you said, you know what, Ben, you said something that I don't want to lose is now that I have it programmed in my little old brain here. And you said something about your students and how you invest. And there's one point I want to make about living on the surface and really not taking the time to go below the surface. And I feel as though the more we live on the surface of either our identity or how we engage with people, the less in touch we are with either that person or that situation. And so what I appreciate about what you shared in your journey is that you went a little bit below the surface, right, to really find, unearth a new behavior, because we're so comfortable, some of us, on living in on the surface.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lisa. I'm sorry.
I think the other thing about young people today too is they don't expect to work anywhere for very long. So the reality is, it doesn't take much to make them to let them go to Monster.
No,
regardless, right? I mean, it's like they are, their values tend to be different. Now, you can't lump everybody, but if you look into some of the trend research, it says, you know, they value free time more. They want to, there are other things that are much more important other than work, et cetera. And so they're going to work to, you know, I haven't seen the latest research, you know, 5 to 10 jobs in their career. I spent 30 years at one company.
Right.
So, and I really never had, there was one time I had I strongly considered leaving. It was only once. And so when I do that, you take your licking and keep on ticking much differently than if you say, hey, you know, because you say, okay, I can suffer a bad manager for a year or two because I'm going to do the other thing I want to do or to go get another boss that I want to. But if I say, hey, I'm only going to be here for 2 or 3 years anyway, this is as good a time as any to leave.
Yeah, that's very true. And actually, that was something, Danielle, I know you and I talked about this at one point, was it's a challenge for a lot of organizations to retain talent and sometimes even attract talent. But, you know, one of the challenges that organizations are going to continue to have are having people. And again, I'm going to speak to the fact that we were all in this organization at a time when there were legacy people in the company. When we say legacy, you will find working at the Coca-Cola company generations of people that work there, whether it's on the bottling side or within the company, you know, the parents, the kids, you know, the third generation is there sometimes. It's
husbands, wives.
Yeah, husbands, wives, kids. I mean, you know, it truly is like, you know, a lot of family members that are there. And you know, I think when you have that, it's changing now because there is not this frame of mind that says, you know, I'm going to be at this place. And even,
oh, it has changed. It's not changing. It has changed.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
That ship has sailed.
Yeah. Well, and you know, they're going through it, you know, even today. And it, you know, it's really hard to feel loyal. I think we were probably all there the first time the company really went through an extensive layoff.
Yeah.
Known as SOA. And then, you know, we had another round of that, and then it just seems like the hits keep coming. But all of that change, all of that evolution makes it very challenging, I think, for people to feel a level of commitment, to feel, you know, like they're going to be valued, I guess, for the long term. So,
Danielle, your loyalty becomes other directed.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, in those days, I was loyal to the company. I felt like the company was loyal to me. When I had brain surgery, what my bosses did, what some senior leaders that reached out to me, it was amazing.
Yeah.
But now my loyalty, especially, we talked about the younger worker, my loyalty is to my family, my friends, my personal give back that I want to do.
Yeah.
I have loyalty. It just is focused elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Danielle,
The days of.
No, go ahead, Lisa.
No, I was going to say the days of predominantly single incomes leading the being the primary breadwinner for the family. More and more today, it's shared breadwinners for the family. Right. So that also has created another dynamic. If I can be more flexible, if you're working and I can like shift and do something else, but if it's only me and I've got kids to take care of and I have a family to take care of, I want to stay where I am. I value the idea that it's going to be there tomorrow, the next day, the next day.
Yeah. No, that's very interesting because that in contrast with the fact that we have an ever increasing single parent household, across the board. Right. So it's it's interesting. But even with that, there is still not a lot of loyalty. And we're going to have to definitely have this conversation again in a few weeks, because one of the things I think, you know, kind of fuels all this is the last 20 years we've had multiple financial collapses, whether it's through WorldCom and Enron, then the housing market. We've had 20 years of war.
Yep.
Like, we've had so many things that influence this younger generation. It's like, we want them to think of this like, hey, have commitment, have loyalty. But look at what they've been exposed to. How are they supposed to have loyalty when they've been, you know, just kind of, for lack of a better word, and I know, Lisa, you didn't say it, but I'll say it, they've been shit upon. But anyway.
Yeah, their sense of trust is gone.
Yeah, yeah. It damaged greatly.
But here's the question that I have, though. Is that a bad thing? Who's to say that what we've gone through, what we've experienced and been exposed to was the right way? Maybe it was all for us to be right here, right now. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But it's just a question that maybe we are where we're supposed to be.
No, I think that is a very that's a very good and optimistic way of thinking about it. And I do, because I've always been very much a change is a normality of life. Like, you're always going to be thrown curveballs, so it's more about learning how to adapt than it is about settling in. And so just like, I don't know, starting a live stream YouTube show just for the sake of doing it. These are just things that I like to do because it's where things are going. And I think it's a great avenue to communicate your thoughts and ideas out there to folks. But there's a lot of folks who just kind of get locked into where they're at and what they're doing. But I think you're right, Danielle. I think this is a great, rather than get nostalgic about how it used to be and how we think it should remain, maybe think about what we're being presented with the changes, the different ways of doing things, the different attitudes, I'll be honest with you, even in this current climate, every day I get up and I see things and I'm like, oh, I don't like that. Oh, but I do like that. Oh, well, that's interesting. Like, I feel like I go through the whole day that way every day.
Right.
You know, one thing I do need to do, though, is probably, and I hate to do this because I love talking to the both of you, so we'll have to definitely do this again. I do need to wrap this because we got started a little bit late and we're a little past midnight now. But before I wrap, and Lisa, I didn't get a chance to do this with you this time, so I apologize for that. But typically what I do at the end of every episode is kind of a what are you drinking? And the last couple episodes I've been bringing wine to the event because that's kind of my deal now. But because we were formerly with Big Red, I do have this, and I also have this. And so what I was drinking tonight
was... And someone who managed the bar channel for the Coca-Cola company, 6 out of the top 10 mixed drinks in America are made with the Coca-Cola products as mixers, so they... It is still greatly appreciated.
Well, because I cannot leave you alone, I will start with this, right? I still have love for the brand, even though I'm not with the brand. And then I think I might chase it with a little bit of that.
My
bottle's still full, though, Ben.
Well, look, there was COVID, and, you know, it got tough. And so we you know... We were home a lot.
It's all good. We're family.
No, but I do want to say thank you to you both for taking your time and doing this. And I've got a lot more topics coming up. And I know that you guys have also expressed interest in future stuff. So really looking forward to that. And I do want to just thank you both for your time. Before one last thing too is I do want to give a plug to both of you because you guys are both doing some amazing work outside of things. So Lisa, you are an author, you are a speaker, you are a travel agent. How about your books? Where do we find them? Where do we go? What if we want to have more Lisa Faye in our life and we want to bring you to speak to an event?
So the best place to go is lisafaye.com. So if you want to give more money to me, go through my website. If you think Amazon needs more of a cut of the money, you may also go find my books on amazon.com. But I am happy to talk to you about a custom solution to really look at how to use communication to really make a difference for your organization to accelerate both personal, professional, and organizational results. And I do a lot of what I do based on what I learned as an improv comedian.
Well, and I will say this too, Lisa, I was always on the sales operations support side of things. So I always got to work with the salespeople, but I never got to be a salesperson. But I hear to former salespeople I speak to today, they all just love Lisa Faye. They have so many wonderful things. You were such a great trainer for so many folks, and you just did such an awesome job at what you did. So I will say, folks who are out there listening, if you need somebody to just bring some fun and some wisdom and some insight and some great stories, check out Lisa and her website, lisafaye.com. Not to be left out, though, as well, Danielle, you are also doing some pretty awesome stuff yourself in the change management space.
Yeah, so I do have a 9-to-5 and a 5-to-10. So if you want to get to know me in my 5-to-10 space, you can go to www.workyourverb.com. www.thebrainfuel.com. So my focus is really partnering with my clients to help you put some action against your goals. And there are goals that are real. We're not going to talk about stuff that's fluffy. We're going to get down to where you need to really focus, where we need to really pivot so that you can persevere. So that's the business that I'm in. If you're ready to work, let's work together.
And, you know, one of the things that, too, that I loved about, well, first of all, like Danielle and I go way back, but you quickly went a different path in the organization, and then you went into like all of this really cool change management stuff, globally traveling around, training people all over the world about how to accept and work with and manage through a lot of the things that were happening within the organization on a global level. So like you literally, was watching your Instagram. You're literally like, you know, you're in Poland and Germany and Russia and all over the place.
Yeah. Like Lisa, you have me beat. I think I'm at 67 countries. but I'm getting there, my friend. Let's go. But you know, that's the interesting part of what I do, what we do is it's not, we don't have a narrow focus on our experience. You know, this is really an eclectic way of helping our people through any kind of transition. You know, I wasn't born and bred change management. I was a salesperson. I was in marketing. I sold clothes at Steinmart, right? So the beauty of all of this is experience that we can help transfer to any client. So I am so fortunate to not only be talking to you, Lisa, you, Ben, but I think we all kind of cut from the same cloth in that what you see is what you get. And it's a whole lot that comes with us.
We can back it up, baby.
That's right.
Absolutely. And this is why I love talking to you both, because it is always a great discussion and great dialogue. And it's funny, my whole thing was like, I'm going to keep these to a half hour. And like, I just completely blew past that on this one. So if you are watching this on Facebook or YouTube and you have hung in this far, thank you so much, because I know sometimes you look at a video and you see that time and you're like, oh, should I watch this? So thank you if you have stuck in this far. Thank you to everybody, who has tuned in and checked this out. Appreciate your patronage, and, are definitely looking forward to, the next week. We will be back doing some more, and, I wish I had my cheat sheet up that told me, what I have coming up next week, but, because I got so into everything, I don't have it, but please come back.
That'll be great.
Whatever it is, it's going to be awesome. But please come back every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific for Satisfactionist Live. Thank you much, everybody. And have a wonderful evening. And I hope you all sleep well. All right.
Until next time.
Until next time.